The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So I just want to expand this a little bit. So Kim talked about relationship with others in terms of friendship, relationship with ourselves in terms of our inner life. And now I'm going to do just relationship within the community. Kind of like just different ways in which we can think about relationship in different parts, different times in our lives. Maybe one area is more rich than another. And part of the way that I'm going to do this is tell a story that's in the suttas. It's Majjhima 128, for those of you who are keeping track of these types of things. Or maybe I'll say also, I think Preeti, you had put in the chat box, can you get the quote? Yes, we'll put the quote and the resource for it in the email that you'll get. And Kim and I will do that for anything that we talk about here. We'll make it accessible for afterwards. So in this story that's preserved in the suttas, there's this community of monks that are quarreling. And someone asks the Buddha to go to them, you know, out of compassion. That's kind of what it means literally. And so, you know, like, you know, this is what they just want the Buddha to go to help these. There's clearly suffering happening when people, there's all this quarreling. So can the Buddha go and kind of help them? And the Buddha arrives and he says, enough, bhikkhus, let there be no quarreling, brawling, wrangling, or dispute. And one of the monks essentially says, buzz off. Just a little bit, you know, alarming, right? The monk says, let the blessed one live at ease, devoted to a pleasant abiding. We are the ones who will be responsible for this. So he's kind of saying, you know, just go do Buddha things. While we're going to stay here, we'll figure this out. And they do this back and forth three times. And then the Buddha leaves. So it's not like we get to this happy resolution right then. I will say that as part of the homework, you will be reading about what the Buddha does when he comes back. Or it's not actually the time. Timing is not exactly clear. But the Buddha does give a teaching with these same quarreling monks. And you'll be reading some of that as some of the homework. But in this story, the Buddha leaves and he goes on alms round. And when he's on alms round, he says a few things to the people that are giving him alms. So not to the quarreling monks, but he says, when many voices shout at once, no one thinks they're a fool. While the Sangha is being split, none thinks themselves to be at fault. He abused me, he hit me, he beat me, he took from me. Those who claim to hate like this never settle their enmity. Breakers of bones and murderers, those who steal cattle, horses, and wealth, those who pillage the entire realm, when even these can act together, why can't you not do so too? I guess I was mistaken. This is what he's saying to those quarreling monks. Like, look, even people who are unethical can get along. And you guys, which are supposed to be ethical, you can't get along. And then he leaves and he goes to the Eastern Bamboo Park. So this other park that's nearby. And as he approached the park, and we should think of a park as just an open area. The park keeper says, do not enter this park, monk. There are three people here seeking their own good. Do not disturb them. So the park keeper doesn't even recognize that the Buddha is the Buddha. Just thinks he's one of these monks who's wandered in. And but the park keeper wants to protect those people who are seeking their own good, quote unquote, is like code for doing Buddhist practice. And then Venerable Anuruddha, who's one of the Buddha's disciples, one of these three people that are doing practices, he overhears this and says, it's fine. He's our teacher. So let him into the park. So this poor Buddha, right? He's not getting the respect that we normally associate with the Buddha in this sutta. And for me, that I love this because it kind of shows his humanity. He's a person. And it's not like he had sunbeams radiating out of his ears or something like this all the time that everybody could recognize. He's a person just like we are. So Venerable Anuruddha, he calls to his friends, come, our teacher, the Blessed One, has arrived. They all arrive. One took the Buddha's bowl, his arms bowl. One prepared a seat, and one set out water for washing his feet. These are the three common things that you would do to greet somebody in the time of the Buddha. There's three people, and they did three different tasks. Each one took a task. So as a community, they're greeting and supporting the Buddha. And then the Buddha says to them, I hope you're all keeping well. I hope you are comfortable. I hope you're not having any trouble getting alms food. They reply that they're doing well and they're able to get alms food. And the Buddha asks, are you living in concord with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, viewing each other with kindly eyes? Remember, he just came from where everybody was fighting. So he thought he might ask, okay, how are you guys doing? And they all respond, yes. And then the Buddha asked, well, how do you get along so well? Like, what are you guys doing compared to the earlier ones? And then Anuruddha replies, in this case, Venerable Sir, I think I'm fortunate, so very fortunate to live together with spiritual companions such as these. I consistently treat these venerables with kindness, by way of body, speech, and mind, both in public and in private. I think, why don't I set aside my own ideas and just go along with these venerables' ideas? That is how we are living in concord, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, and viewing each other with kindly eyes. So I want to make a little bit of a comment here. I don't want to say that we always have to put our own ideas and needs behind and do what others are doing. But if we remember that these are three monks who have, they're practicing together to reach awakening. So they come from a similar background. They're living in a similar situation and they have the same goals. And to support one another, to practice together. Right? These three kind of took away from maybe the larger Sangha and said, let's practice together. So it's not, I don't want us to take this into contemporary times and say that we should never have our own ideas or our own views. So then after Anuruddha says this, the Buddha replies, I hope you abide diligent, ardent, and resolute. So Anuruddha was telling them how they work together, how they practice together. But the Buddha is asking them, these are kind of code words, diligent, ardent, and resolute. They're associated with meditation practice. So the Buddha is asking, well, how are you working with meditation? But Anuruddha, he responds with what they do, how they, the behaviors that they do. And he says, Anuruddha says, whichever of us returns first from the village with alms food, prepares the seats, sets out the water for drinking and for washing, and puts the refuse bucket in its place. Whichever of us returns last eats any food left over if he wishes. Otherwise, he throws it away where there is no greenery or drops it into water where there is no life. Just as an aside, monastics are not allowed to store food. So this is required. He puts away the seats and the water for drinking and for washing. He puts away the refuse bucket after washing it. And he sweeps out the refectory, the place where they're staying. And then the third one, whoever notices that the pots of water for drinking, washing, or their latrine are low or empty, takes care of them. If they're too heavy for him, he calls someone else and they move it by joining hands. So coming together and moving it. So they have this little system of how they work together. And for those of you who have ever been on meditation retreats where you have yogi jobs, Kim was just describing how she helped in Sri Lanka with cleanup after the monkeys. Kim didn't say this specifically, but I'm guessing this was done without a lot of talking. It was just this sense of like, okay, I'll do this and you do that. Maybe there's some functional speech, but it's just a way like, okay, together, we'll take care of what needs to be done. So here that in this story, the Buddha is pointing to having flexibility regarding what one wishes to do. And it doesn't mean that we have to behave this way in everything that we do, but being aware and sensitive what needs to be done. And what's practical to be done in this kind of way. So maybe it's also a way in which we can recognize that maybe sometimes we don't have to have our own way. Maybe there are some times in which we also can honor, just maybe as we talked about a little bit earlier, that there are different types of relationships. That there are people that we practice with and we have common goals. Maybe there's other people that maybe we don't have exactly the same goals, but we're coming together for different reasons. Maybe there's a work situations where we represent one department and they represent another department and we have, you know, we're coming together as a team, as a blended team, or maybe we have more intimacy with some people. And so the way that we would share responsibilities is a little bit different. But it's just pointing to the Buddha's real concern about whether we're quarreling or getting along. And for us to notice, is there a way in which we can not insist that what we want to do always goes first? And then I'll add the caveat, also with still honoring boundaries and, you know, not allowing ourselves to be mistreated or taken advantage of or those types of things. But then this idea of that our practice communities are really important. Like this, for example, this course that we're in together and any form of a sangha that you have. Buddha talks about spiritual friends, uses this word friends and comrades and companions to recognize the relationships that have different levels of intimacy. And we'd like to think that a practice community, a Buddhist practice community, is one in where maybe we can try out some new behaviors or maybe stretch our ideas about ourselves or our ideas and expressions of what it means to be a good person, be a good Buddhist, to practice sila. And also, maybe I'll end with this thing. So also this idea of relationships kind of also ties in this idea of implicitly the value of our compassion, our virtue, our love, our care, because others are the recipients of what we are cultivating and developing here. And so to recognize the importance of, you know, we're all in this together, and especially in this kind of a Buddhist practice community, is an opportunity for us to maybe stretch and expand and explore our relationships with others in a way that maybe we're wouldn't do with work colleagues or intimate relationships who aren't Buddhist practitioners or something like that. So maybe I'll leave it for that, but leave that for now, and then just open it up more broadly for any questions or comments. And Kim, I feel like I've been doing a lot of the Q&A, so I'd love to kind of like bring your voice in here too, of course, right? So I'd like to open it up. Do people have comments or questions?
Chris?
I just brought up, I lived through the San Francisco Zen community for a number of years on and off, and you're required to do quite a lot of work within group situations. And many times there'd be already personal issues going on with members living within the Sangha. And inevitably, you'd all have to work in the kitchen together. And it really would come out in the kitchen, how people bang pans. There's, you know, it would be really pretty stressful, actually. And there would be a lot of complaints going to teachers like, what about that person? What's he doing here? What's she doing here? This person's so lazy. And it was sort of that old sort of idea that you've heard with people living in communities like this, where they like to have the bad seed or two bad seeds just to ruffle everyone's feathers. So it was an interesting process for me, especially if it was a really hot kitchen. And you know, you get a lot of people that think they know best or don't listen to directions, or you're the person supervising you knew much less about what they were trying to supervise you about. So it was like having to really watch my tongue sometimes and really learn, be with people that were learning how to be more efficient in what they did, or more open, or it's a very good part of Zen practice and living in a community like that. And I always admired, you get a group of 50 or 60 Zen students together and they could build a barn in a day, just given the right direction, because they were used to working in groups. So I'm just going to offer that out.
Thank you. It's a great skill and good practice also, as we all know.
I was going to say that I'm really enjoying being in Zoom community, because it's an opportunity I find to practice that's a little less threatening, because you don't have to pay as much attention to your body, because you're only seeing this much. So when I'm practicing feeling into my body, responding to what somebody else is saying, like renunciation practices that I have about taking a beat before I respond, things like that don't come across as awkward on Zoom as they are in person sometimes. And so I do have a little greed around this, but I have a trivia group that I do, like a game kind of group. And so when I'm interacting in that type of sangha, I can sit with just a smile on my face. They don't know what I'm really doing, but I'm practicing renouncing something like seizing on their mistake. Like, 'cause that's just about a conceit or, you know, and ill will towards myself and others. And so I am enjoying I'm finding it fruitful to practice being in community on Zoom in so many ways. It just tickles me, but I don't know. And I guess it is kind of the greed of making good use of this pandemic time and having that be part of our lives that hopefully will lead to some things moving within me. So when although I'm going to be so socially awkward when I come out of quarantine, because I've gotten so used to not having to do some of these things, like total eye contact or, you know, things like that. Anyway, I just am tickled now talking about it and sharing with people about this Zoom community and the fruits of it in a lot of ways that I've found and appreciate. Thank you.
I was took Lee Morgan because I felt like I wanted to say, don't worry, it's okay. You can wear your PJs when you come in person too. How many of us are wearing, right, you know, in the bottom, you know, comfy clothes? Like, okay, that's fine. You can do that in person. I don't, of course, don't know what you're wearing, but you know, it's just, I just,
Oh, I'm wearing PJs. I'm home. For sure. You know me so well.
I think it's fantastic.
Real quickly, she brings up a very important point. It's almost like we're on retreat. It's a new kind of way of being. And when we go back to being in with each other, so we can notice a lot of things like she was noticing. I notice I'm freer clearing my throat, you know, so little while we're meditating. So when I'm in my sangha in the group, I'm very careful not to clear my throat. So I don't know. It is very different, but that's a tiny idea. But there's bigger ideas because like when you're on retreat and you get finished with the retreat, you have a burst of energy. It's all different and you have to come back into life the way it is. So I think that was a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. It was a really good thing. I'm glad she mentioned that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big opportunity. You know, those of you who have been on retreat know that some of the best insights come when we pick up the way of being that we had before. Things start coming back, the layers come back on, and we have some choice about which ones we pick up. And so I think it'll be the same thing on kind of a larger scale for those of us who have had a little, the good fortune to have some quiet time during this time. Okay. Well, we're moving toward the end then, and I'll just, you'll get an email, of course, as usual, but you'll be reading a sutta about principles of cordiality, or I guess another translator calls them warm-hearted qualities. So you can, there's another translation difference. You can take your pick between those. And then we also thought that it might be an interesting time to observe how you show up in the groups that you're in. And that could be, you know, these kinds of online sanghas, but it could be your work group or if you have a family Zoom call or something also. So, you know, questions about whether we're bringing in some of these qualities like being open, being flexible, being generous, being caring. You know, to what degree do I manifest these, knowing that, you know, they're going to influence the dynamics of the group? And then on the flip side, also along the lines of what Diana was saying about not always doing what others, you know, having to do what others think, do I retain mindfulness and independence of thought when I'm in a group? Because, you know, groupthink or getting caught up in what a group is doing is also not always skillful. So you have to notice whether or not the energy of the group and the mood of it is something skillful and you want to be contributing to and involved with, or if it isn't quite, and so then you just maintain mindfulness. So these will be some explorations you could try out during the coming week if you want, as always, if you want. And next week we'll continue with exploring different realms of practice. So this was roughly the realm of sila, and next week will be roughly the realm of samadhi, but we'll also include the heart practices. So it's kind of a heart and happiness focused week. Hope to see you then. Any last comments, Diana?
Maybe I'll say that we're going to look a little bit at samadhi, not in the usual way, kind of like how we did sila, not in the usual way. Because we're thinking that's, we kind of want to build on that people have experience already. So we're looking at it a little bit different way. So you have to, that's a little bit of a teaser to encourage you to come back. Okay.
See you next week.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. You can unmute yourself if you'd like and we can say goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.